It's time for America Outdoors Radio, the show that covers the outdoor scene across the U.S. of A. and the entire continent. Fishing, hunting, conservation, outdoor recreation, and great destinations, we cover it all every week. It's your country, your outdoors. Let's explore it together with your host, John Cruz.
Welcome aboard. We've got a really interesting and informative show for you this week. We're going to start things off in just a minute or two talking to that well-known hunting and shooting expert, Ron Spomer, about the brand new 6.8 Western rifle cartridge introduced by Winchester and Browning this past week. Ron's going to give you his insight as to where this fits into the world of hunting and shooting and let you know how it shoots too. After that, we get to talk to David Van Wee. He's a fly fisherman and outdoors writer from New Hampshire who has come out with a great book. It's called Storied Waters, and it's all about a six-week road trip David took fishing the waters some of our literary giants in America made famous. We are talking everything from Henry David Thoreau's Walden Pond in Massachusetts to a river Ernest Hemingway fished on Michigan's Upper Peninsula that became the setting for one of my favorite short stories of all time. David will tell you about these writers and others, what waters they fished and what they look like today, and how his fishing trips went at each one of these places. Fly fishing is an effective method to catch fish most of the time, but it's not the best way to catch walleye in the winter. That's why Bob Loomis with Max Lure, a company specializing in walleye lures, will join us to share some advice about how to catch walleye this time of year in open waters, not the iced over ones. Now, I know some of you listening today in Minnesota in your ice shacks aren't going to believe this, but in states like Tennessee, Georgia, Missouri, and Washington, there's some pretty good walleye fishing going on right now, and there's no ice on the water in these places. However, the water is cold, and your tactics will need to change a bit from what you do in the spring, summer, or fall to catch them. After we talk to Bob about walleye, we broach a heftier subject with Charles Cotton. He's the first vice president of the National Rifle Association, and unless you've been hiding under a rock the last 2 weeks, you are probably aware this prominent Second Amendment rights organization is filing for bankruptcy and moving from New York to Texas. Why are they moving? What does the bankruptcy mean for the NRA? And what does it mean when it comes to the NRA lobbying for the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms? Charles will answer all of these questions in the hour ahead. Speaking of the Second Amendment and the NRA, did you know that Henry Repeating Arms has a lever-action rifle that's all about this? It's true. It's the Second Amendment Tribute Edition 22 caliber lever-action rifle, and it is a beauty. In addition to the walnut stock and octagon barrel, it has a nickel-plated receiver with gold-plated engraving that's all about defending the Second Amendment. If you're looking for a wall hanger to display and make a statement, this is the one for you. And if you want to shoot it, you won't be disappointed. Just like all of Henry Repeating Arms rifles and shotguns, this lever action 22 not only looks great, but it shoots great too. Right out of the box, and just like every other Henry firearm, this one is made in America, and where else would you make a rifle celebrating the Second Amendment, right? You can check out the Second Amendment Tribute Rifle and over 200 other models at henryusa.com. While online, be sure to ask for your free catalog and decals, and if you want that Second Amendment Tribute Rifle, just talk to the award-winning customer service staff at Henry Repeating Arms. They'll help you order this rifle or any of the other fine firearms they manufacture. HenryUSA.com. Go there today. We've got big news today from our first guest on America Outdoors Radio. It's Ron Spomer. He's a person I consider to be an eminent dean of hunting and shooting in the United States. He's a very well-known outdoors writer, TV personality. You can find out what's going on with Ron at his website, RonSpomerOutdoors.com. He's also got up the YouTube channel as well. Great to have you back on the air, Ron.
Hi, great to be here, John. Thanks.
So you dropped a YouTube video the same day that Winchester and Browning announced a brand new cartridge, the 6.8 Western. Got a lot of traction, a lot of views. Let's talk about this new cartridge because every cartridge has a purpose or a niche where it fits in. When it comes to the 6.8 Western, what's its story?
Well, the niche they're trying to fit is selling more guns and ammo, obviously.
Yes.
That's what they're supposed to do. But what they were thinking, I believe, is that the long, high BC bullets are the rage right now. Everybody just loves the efficiency of those long bullets. And the 6.5s are real popular because of that. But they don't have a really heavyweight bullet. For a heavyweight bullet in there would be a 142, maybe 150 grains. And that's just getting into kind of your deer bullet range for a 270, a 308, 30-06. So they thought, how can we keep this long bullet with that high ballistic coefficient for long-range efficiency and retaining a lot of energy downrange in a heavier bullet? Why don't we go up in caliber a little bit from 264, which is your 6.5s. It's a 0.264 of an inch in diameter. Let's step it up to the 270. 277 is the diameter of that bullet, and you're going to have a heavier bullet. So to do that, you've got to have a certain amount of powder to drive it, and everybody loves these short actions these days. So they took their WSM, you know, the 270 Winchester short magnum.
Right.
They took that basic case, and they pushed the shoulder back a little bit, and put longer bullets on it. And in order to stabilize those bullets, you have to build special fast-twist rifling. So all the rifles that will be chambered for this 6.8 have 1-in-8 or 1-in-7.5-inch twist rates. And that will stabilize bullets up to at least 175 grains in a 270. So they're sort of filling a little bit of a niche that some people have been asking for by saying, why can't we shoot longer bullets in our 270s? Well, because there's too many 270s out there with slow twist barrels. And if they loaded the ammunition with big long bullets, they wouldn't stabilize and everybody would grouse and complain. So let's just make a new cartridge. So that's what they did with that 6.8. It's really a 270. Huh. And it's a short, fat case. But it allows you to drive the 270 bullets that are a lot heavier and more efficient. So you retain more energy downrange. And up to 500 yards is about as far as they're going to tell you to shoot as a hunter. They're not going to be pushing this crazy 1,000-yard stuff. But 1,000 yards, it probably puts out 200 to 300 foot-pounds more energy than the 6.5s.
Interesting. So question for you here. Well, I guess I'm going to have two questions for you. Number one, I know there's going to be some rifles that are already coming out and are out specifically for the 6.8 Western, but I want to be clear on something. Can you shoot a 270 cartridge out of a 6.8 Western or vice versa?
No. A lot of people have been asking that. The only thing you can chamber in it is this 6.8. It's too short for the WSM, and the 270 is a much narrower cartridge. These are fat. The 6.8 is a much fatter cartridge, have a bigger head on it. So the 270 would just rattle in there. Plus the 270 is too long, so there's no way it's going to fit.
So I'm assuming, since Winchester and Browning came out with the cartridge, that they both have bolt-action rifles that are chambered specifically for the 6.8 Western?
Yeah, and a surprising number. I saw a list just the other day from Browning. My gosh, there were 12 different rifles on there. So they've got their X-Bolt is their basic platform, and they have it in all kinds of camo colors and wood stocks and fiberglass stocks and carbon stocks and everything else. So they've got about 12 different versions. Winchester has it in the Model 70, plus their XPR synthetic rifle. So they've got, I think I saw 5 or 6 in each of those. So you're probably looking at about 20 different rifles out there that are chambered for it.
Definitely big news for 2021. Last question. I know you've known about the 6.8 Western since November. I'm assuming you've had a chance to fire a few rounds downrange. What are your impressions about it?
Yeah, I fired a lot, actually. I did a piece reviewing it for American Hunter magazine, so I had to shoot a lot. And I also got to hunt with it last November. That's where I discovered it. They invited me on what's called a writer's hunt so that I would be having some material to work with for this article. And I took a deer, a really good Nebraska buck with that cartridge at long range, went much longer than I would normally shoot, but I was kind of hired to do the job. And it is everything it's pretty much stacked up to be, you know. It's not a world breaker with something new. It's just a fine-tuning, you know. It's a tweaking. You can still hunt with your 270s and just about as well, but it just lets you reach out a little bit farther and retain more energy and drift less in the wind than you would with the old 270s.
All right. Now you've got the skinny on the new 6.8. 8 Western, the new rifle cartridge from Winchester and Browning. And there are rifles available from both companies where you can go ahead and buy this ammo, put it in those rifles, and do a little bit better maybe out there in the field this fall. If you want to find out more about what's going on with Ron Spomer and check out this video about this, go to his YouTube channel. And of course, you can keep up with Ron at ronspomeroutdoors.com. Ron, always a pleasure. Love having you on America Outdoors Radio.
Yeah, I love visiting with you, John. Call anytime.
Ready to step up to a quality-built rifle or shotgun that's a true classic? Check out Henry Repeating Arms, American-made. There's over 200 models to choose from in a variety of finishes and calibers for hunters and target shooters. Many of these are lever-action models with a look right out of the Old West. Don't be deceived, though. Henry Repeating Arms are modern, rugged, accurate, reliable, and have a lifetime guarantee. Find out more and order a free catalog today at henryusa.com. That's henryusa.com.
Immerse yourself in a complete Alaska wilderness experience through Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Up to six of you will spend a week in a beautiful waterfront log home in a secluded cove. Every day is a new adventure. Go on a guided fishing trip or haul in a bounty of shrimp and crab. Visit a Native American village where totem poles are carved. Go on a whale or bear watching trip and return back to your very own place at the end of the day. Find out more about the Alaska Wilderness Experience at alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is the voice for your public lands, waters, and wildlife. From the Canadian Yukon to the Florida Everglades, we're stepping up to conserve North America's public lands, defend our hunting and fishing traditions, and expand public access to the outdoors. Our outdoor heritage depends on sportsmen and women like you speaking up for the natural resources that sustain our way of life. Find out how you can get involved at backcountryhunters.org and become a BHA member today.
You're back in with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. I've got to share a book with you that I've been reading. It is a fun read. The title is Storied Waters. It's 35 fabled fly fishing destinations and the writers and artists who made them famous. The author is David Van Wee. He hails from New Hampshire, and we've got him on the line right now. David, welcome to the show, and boy, oh boy, this is a fun book to read.
Oh, good. Thanks. I'm glad you're enjoying it, John.
I love the fact this is basically a six-week journey that you did across Eastern and Middle America, fishing waters made famous by some of America's best-known authors and writing about each one of these destinations. What inspired you to write this book?
It was an invitation that came out of a request to republish Robert Traver's famous passage, Testament of a Fisherman. We wanted to publish it in my other book, The Confluence, and I needed to get permission from the owners of the copyright to do that. So I ended up contacting Robert Travers, is the pen name for John Volker, and his daughter Gracie gave me permission to publish it. And as a result of that, she invited me to come fish at Frenchman's Pond, which is her dad's secret spot in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where he had a camp. And it was an invitation I couldn't turn down to go fish where one of your great literary heroes fished and lived. So I had to figure out how to get there. And the answer was, well, fish your way there and back. So I decided that maybe there were other places that were tied to literature and writers that I could visit along the way. And that grew to a pretty long list, and it turned into a six-week journey. And I thought, well, if it's interesting enough and I write about it and blog about it and take photos, that perhaps it could be a book. And no guarantees going in that it would be interesting enough to turn into a book, but turns out it was, and here we are.
Your first stop during this journey was Concord, Massachusetts. And when most people hear that name, they immediately think of the first battle fought in the Revolutionary War against the British. However, near Concord is also Walden Pond, and Henry David Thoreau spent a lot of time there, wrote, of course, on Walden Pond. I had no idea that this pond, A, was a state park, B, open for fishing, and actually 60 acres. That's a pretty big pond. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about this place and how the fishing was?
Yeah, so I decided to start at Walden Pond more for symbolic reasons. And I was always sort of intrigued that you could catch fish there. So I started there, and it's a really interesting pond geologically. It's a glacial kettle pond left by a big chunk of ice. It's 60 acres, but it's 100 feet deep.
Oh.
And it's got cold, clear water running through there, and they've protected it well, and they stock it with fish. It gets pretty heavy use for both fishing and swimming. So I started there with a good friend of mine who lived nearby, and I wasn't able to catch the trout that were rising to these little midges, but I did the next morning go back and caught a couple of nice smallmouth bass. They were spawning. I was there right at about spawning time. And my trip was more focused on trout, but I also realized that mid-May is kind of, in southern New England, is pretty prime bass spawning season. So I was prepared. And my first fish that I caught on the whole trip was a very nice smallmouth bass on a popper, a little small popper.
Which is pictured in the book, by the way, folks. And, you know, I love the fact that, like me, you're an enthusiastic angler, but you're not always successful. And I think that's the story of just about all of us out there. You read a lot of books, you read a lot of articles, and the author is always an expert. They're always catching fish right and left. You know, on Walden Pond and on several other places you fished, you got skunked.
Yeah. And in fact, that my deepest fear, and I talk about this a couple times in the book, my deepest fear was that I'd spend 6 weeks hearing people say, you should have been here last week, you know. And in fact, that was actually the title at one point for the chapter that I wrote about. It's actually called Bug Soup on the East Branch of the Delaware. And I sort of play on that story a little bit. Turns out I had a fabulous day on the Delaware. And at the end, I kind of say, well, you know, the guide's going to be telling people next week that you should have been here last week when Dave was here. But then the next day, I fished the Beaver Kill, and I got totally skunked on the Beaver Kill. And that chapter is called Beaver Kill Blues, because I just couldn't do anything right. It was 90 degrees and sunny, and, you know, just nothing was working for me. And that's just the way it is with fishing.
Yes, it
is. You got to keep your expectations in check and be willing to be humbled in this sport.
Very well said. Again, folks, we're talking to David Van Wee. He's the author of Storied Waters, 35 Fabled Fly Fishing Destinations and the Writers and Artists Who Made Them Famous. Got to head back to Michigan to talk about my favorite author and one of my favorite stories, Hemingway's Big Two-Hearted River from the Nick Adams stories. I always thought he fished the Two-Hearted River. I didn't know until I read your book that he was actually fishing the Fox River, and that was the inspiration for these stories.
Yeah, if you go to his biography, he actually went on a trip there with some friends when he was, I believe, 19 years old, and they caught a bunch of fish. And I think that was the model in his mind when he wrote the story. And the other interesting thing is Robert Traver, or John Volker, has a whole story about this in his book, Trout Magic, called Hemingway's Big Two-Hearted Secret. And he dissects the misunderstanding that apparently Hemingway had just borrowed the name Two-Hearted River because it sounded better as a title than the Fox River. So it's interesting to see John Volker or Robert Traver's version of it. But so I ended up pulling in after going to French Prince Pond on my way back across east across the Upper Peninsula. I stopped in at Saney, where Hemingway got off the train, and then he walked across to the bridge and watched the fish under the bridge, and that there's a bridge right there on the highway. And then apparently he went upstream, and the Michigan Outdoor Writers Association and TU folks had put a plaque farther upstream. I didn't actually go where people believe Hemingway and or Nick Adams, the hero of the story, fished. I fished in a couple of other stretches. And unfortunately for me, that was another day where the Fox was pretty blown out due to rain. So I didn't get to catch any of the giant fish like Nick did. But still, it's just it almost gives you chills at times when you're out there thinking about the world through the eyes of these writers and trying to retrace their steps. And, you know, in researching the book, I learned a ton about Hemingway and where he fished, and it was really interesting. And I tried to put what I thought was the most interesting tidbits in the story.
The book again, folks, is Storied Waters. The author is David Van Wee. We are out of time, but look for this at your local bookstore. Of course, you can get it online at Amazon.com. Where else can people get this book, David?
Well, I like them to get it through my website, which is watchyourbackcast.com. Pretty easy to remember if you're a fly fisher. Watchyourbackcast.com. And I can do signed and personalized books for people who order them through me. And also, these days, especially, support your local bookstores. Go down to your local bookstore, order it through them. That, to me, is a way to help your community.
All right. So go to your local bookstore, or if you want that signed and autographed copy, and that's always a great gift and a treasure to have, go to watchyourbackcast.com. The book again, Storied Waters by David Van Wee. David, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
Thank you.
The Dalzen, Oregon is your base camp for fishing fun. Reel in big salmon, tangle with steelhead, bass, and walleye, or wrestle a monster sturgeon to the boat. After the day is done, you'll find a variety of lodging options around town. Need to resupply? We've got you covered with sporting goods stores, plus great dining, breweries, wineries, and can't-miss attractions like the Gorge Discovery Center. Plan your fishing getaway today at explorethedalles.com. That's explorethedalles.com.
Campers, adventure seekers, hunters, and foodies. No matter the lifestyle, we can all agree on one thing. Great food and great people are worth remembering. At Camp Chef, we don't just make grills. We create each product knowing that a warm meal is always better when it's shared with those we love. Learn more about Camp Chef grills, smokers, and portable cooking equipment at campchef.com. That's campchef.com for a better way to cook outdoors.
Next up on America Outdoors Radio, you probably heard the news. The National Rifle Association has declared bankruptcy and they're moving from New York to Texas. We thought we'd dig into what's going on here. That's why we've got Charles Cotton on the line. He's the first vice president of the National Rifle Association. Charles, thanks for taking the time today.
Good morning, John, and thanks for having me. I'm getting a chance to talk to your listeners, and I appreciate it.
Well, Charles, back in the day when you and I grew up, when you heard about an organization or company declaring bankruptcy, that generally meant they were going out of business. What does bankruptcy mean for the National Rifle Association?
And you're correct about the first reaction to the word bankruptcy is, oh, Lord, they're in financial trouble and they're going out of business. And that's certainly not the case for us. In fact, we are stronger now financially than we have been in quite a number of years because of the way our members and new members and donors have signed up with us, have donated because of what's going on in New York. We are using Chapter 11 of the Bankruptcy Code, which is reorganization. We're using that as a vehicle to get out of corrupt New York, where we have been chartered since 1871, and we're moving our charter to Texas. That's the reason we're in bankruptcy court now.
Before we get into more about the move to Texas, I've got to tell you, I'm a little surprised to hear that financially you're doing as well as you are, because with COVID-19, a lot of organizations, including the NRA through your Friends of the NRA banquets, have relied on fundraising through banquets and other events to fill the coffers to do the work that you do. So that hasn't happened. How have you made up that financial ground, and who's stepping up to the plate?
Well, of course, we have donors. We have members who, we have brand new members who bring in revenue. And then we have everything from the new member to the long-term member that stepped up to the plate and contributed to the organization. Now, you're right about the COVID. The COVID shutdowns in various states and cities has had a big impact on things like the Friends of the NRA dinner. That's probably the single biggest thing right there. All of that goes to the NRA Foundation. It's not, NRA proper. So it's had a big hit on them. But a lot of that money also goes to our programs that we put on, educational programs, matches, and that kind of stuff. And of course, those too are shut down because of COVID. So yes, it's had an impact on the fundraising for the foundation, but then the money that we'd normally put into some of our programs is not needed because we can't conduct them.
All right. Well, thanks for the clarification on that. Let's talk moving from New York to Texas. You're saying that New York is corrupt. I know the Attorney General in New York has certainly, pardon the horrible pun here, got the NRA in their sights. Tell me more about why you're making this move and why Texas?
The why part goes all the way back to 2017 when the then Attorney General of the state of New York, Eric Schneiderman, who by his own admission is not a friend of the NRA, but he is apparently an honorable man in the way he deals with other companies, because he called an NRA board member and warned us. He said, hey, you guys, I'm getting all kind of pressure from the governor. We're being forced to investigate the NRA. You better make sure that you go above and beyond whatever New York not-for-profit law requires, because this investigation is politically motivated and it's not going to be fair.
Wow.
So we started, you know, looking at everything from top to bottom. Then about the same time, we found out that the governor of New York ordered then the superintendent of the Department of Financial Services to, well, in my words, in my view, extort banks and insurance companies not to do business with the NRA if they want to keep doing business in New York. And through our lawsuit against the governor and against Maria Vullo, the former DFS superintendent, we have uncovered documents and interviewed people who gave us the extent to which they have been extorted not to do business with the NRA. Then you add on top of that the current Attorney General, Letitia James. All the way back to summer of 2018, when she was a candidate, was calling us a terrorist organization, a criminal enterprise, even though she had not spent 1 minute investigating us. And then, the day before our annual convention in 2019, she releases a press release saying that I'm investigating the NRA. And then in August of this year, she files a lawsuit against us seeking not to recover money, not to go after any people she claims are wrongdoers, but trying to dissolve the organization. So that's the political atmosphere, or I should say the corrupt political atmosphere that we experience in New York, and we want to get to Texas. We chose Texas because it supports our views, because we have 400,000 NRA members in Texas.
Charles, if the organization moves to Texas and incorporates in the state of Texas, does this undercut New York's ability to do anything to the NRA?
Short answer to that is yes. Like I say, her petition, I'm talking about Letitia James, the New York AG, she's seeking to dissolve us, and she cannot do that now. The bankruptcy judge determines our future. So,
very interesting.
Correct. She cannot achieve her goal of driving the NRA out of business.
So, two-pronged approach here. So this is a preemptive move by the NRA to prevent her efforts, A, through the bankruptcy court, and B, by moving to Texas. This leaves her with no cards to play, it sounds like, when it comes to trying to impact the NRA. Is that correct?
I don't know what she's going to do, and I'm an attorney. I don't practice in the bankruptcy area, though, so I don't want to mislead you or your listeners on that. But I don't know what she's going to do. I suspect she's going to, you know, beat her chest like she already has in the one statement she's made, and she's probably going to file various motions trying to derail this process. But I have the utmost confidence in the judge. I think the judge is going to look at that, and I think he'll know what's going on, and then we'll see what happens from there.
Fascinating, fascinating stuff, getting this behind-the-curtains view of what's going on here. I think a lot of folks, though, are going to want to know this. When it comes to declaring bankruptcy, Chapter 11, reorganization, when it comes to moving from New York to Texas, what changes are members of the NRA going to see, and what's the public going to see in terms of any changes with the NRA, particularly when it comes to the basic mission of protecting the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms for all Americans?
In terms of our mission, there'll be no change at all. And I hate cliches because they're so overused, but through this process of looking at our own operation, and this, by the way, is something that was ordered by Wayne LaPierre, in spite of what Letitia James and enemies of the NRA would say. But in this process, we have been streamlining already. And if we didn't need to spend money on this particular project, you know, we reevaluated it, you know, we cut it out. If we need to spend more money in other areas because that was more effective, we would do that. So we are already a more efficient organization than we were in 2017. And I think we're going to see even more benefits like that when we get out of bankruptcy, which people have asked me, when is this going to be? And we're targeting 180 days. That's our goal. And it's a very realistic goal because part of bankruptcy, even if in a reorganization, part of it is deciding how your creditors going to be paid. And we're going to pay them 100 cents on the dollar plus interest. I mean, that shows you that we are not in financial trouble. Our plan is going to include what's called a 100% plan. Everybody gets paid in full plus interest.
Yeah.
So people aren't going to see anything different. We will be keeping our D.C. office for our Institute for Legislative Action folks. You know, that's our political and legislative arm. So people aren't going to see any difference. If anything, they'll see us more active once these COVID restrictions are lifted and we're able to get out and meet with our folks and conduct classes and all the things that we do that are not limited to the political arena.
Well, and hopefully that includes putting on the Great American Outdoors Show again next year in 2022 in Harrisburg, PA. But until then, and for now, we've got to let you go because we are out of time. But Charles, I really want to thank you for taking the time today to really shed some light on what's going on with the National Rifle Association. I think our listeners do appreciate it.
John, I appreciate the chance to visit with you and your listeners. There's so much misinformation out there. I really appreciate the opportunity to let your folks know what's really going on and not just what's being said about us.
We've been telling you about Sportsman's Cove Lodge in Southeast Alaska for a while now, and there's a reason. They are the only Alaska lodge we talk about in this show. It's because they're truly Alaska's best lodge. The adventure starts with a float plane ride from Ketchikan, after which you'll get the chance to experience some of the best hospitality, food, and wonderful people you'll ever meet. Wildlife is abundant, from bears and deer to eagles and whales, and let's not forget the reason you're here, the fishing. Halibut, salmon, lingcod, rockfish, true cod, and more. It's all waiting for you in abundance at Sportsman's Cove Lodge. Book your trip today at alaskasbestlodge.com. That's alaskasbestlodge.com for Sportsman's Cove Lodge.
Shiloh Inns are open and ready to welcome you back. Hello, I'm Mark Hemstreet, owner of Shiloh Inns. While we practice social distancing, we're still always committed to providing clean, safe, comfortable rooms and friendly service. Shiloh hotel guests and employees deserve the peace of mind knowing that we are always focused on maintaining high standards of cleaning and safety practices. Our American spirit is alive and strong, and while we're all going through these unprecedented historical times, we can face these challenges together. Although we may wear face masks, there are no restrictions on still making travel memories for business or pleasure. So book your next stay with confidence by calling 1-800-222-2244 or visit our website at shilohinns.com. Shiloh Inns, affordable excellence, American family owned and proud of it.
The election is over, and this is not another political ad. But with a change in president, there is uncertainty. Uncertainty in the market. Will it be up or will it be down? Uncertainty on how the new administration will handle taxes for your retirement. A new report states that the Biden administration may take away key tax benefits to traditional retirement plans. But what if there was a better way? A way to save for retirement tax-free? We can help business owners, freelancers, and regular working folks get on track with their retirement without risk and without taxes. For more information, get your no-cost, tax-free retirement income strategy guide now by calling 888-585-1615. That's 888-585-1615. Find out how sound investment principles can give you a retirement where you eliminate the spend down of your savings and create more income for your retirement tax-free. Call today and get the free guide, 888-585-1615. That's 888-585-1615. Call now, 888-585-1615.
Hunting and fishing are exercises in hope. Before you head into the woods, you hope to tag out on a deer you'll have to field dress. Before you make that first cast, you hope for a big fish to clean and fillet. When your hopes are realized, you'll need a sharp knife. Whether you sharpen that blade on a power sharpener in the shop or a manual sharpener in the field, WorkSharp has the tool for you. Look for WorkSharp products in sporting goods stores near you or online at WorkSharpTools.com.
You're back in with America Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. It is wintertime, and believe it or not, now is actually the best time to catch yourself a trophy walleye. Now, a lot of folks are doing it under the ice, but there's open water all throughout the United States you can fish too. So, we've got somebody on board to help you catch open water walleye during the winter. His name is Bob Loomis. He is a director of sales and marketing for Max Lure, a company that specializes in walleye lures. Bob, great to have you on the air.
Thank you, John.
Let's break this down into two bits. We'll start off with lakes. Let's talk about lakes that have open water. This time of year, where are you looking for walleye in terms of depth, in terms of structure, and what are you going to throw at them to try to get them to bite?
Well, John, you know, this time of the year, when you start talking open water, you're obviously talking warmer water that's not hard, not frozen, and you're talking about areas that, depending on weather, depending on temperatures, everything else, you know, these fish spawn in the spring. So the large females are going to go to the areas where they're going to spawn, and that's what people are looking for, those large fish. You know, you get large fish all over the United States in different capacities. I mean, you have walleye down into Georgia, North Carolina, Tennessee, you know, a lot of areas that people can target these fish year-round. And this is the time of year to target those large females wanting to spawn.
Is it fair to say they're generally going to be around drop-offs and shelves as they are in this pre-spawn mode? Is that the sort of structure you're looking for?
Well, yeah. And like I said, a lot of it's dependent on your weather, your water temperature, everything else. Because let's face it, these are predatory fish. Their whole life revolves around food. So they're going to follow bait. And wherever that bait is, whether it's some type of small shad, you know, whatever, they're going to follow that bait and work them. And being a predatory fish, they're an ambush feeder. So they're going to use shelves, they're going to use structure, they're going to use things to hide and ambush that bait.
Let's talk about techniques. I know a lot of ice anglers like to use blade baits or other vertical jigging options or even just jigs themselves. Do these work on the open water just as well?
They work on the open water just as well, especially when you find a concentration of fish. You know, it works great. A lot of the areas in the Midwest predominantly did nothing but jig for years because you couldn't actually troll for them, but that has since changed. But, you know, jigs are a great option, especially when you start talking about the sonic bait fish, where you can hook it up like a blade bait on the back, or you can hook it on the front and fish it like a regular vertical jig. You know, there's so many different ways to fish it.
Let's talk about trolling for walleye. And I guess this is something when you talk about not just lakes, but in rivers that hold walleye too. When it comes to the winter months, what do you present and how do you present an offering for walleye to get them to bite this time of year?
Well, you know, for trolling applications for open water, and especially this time of year, it's a lot colder than usual in anywhere you're going to fish. So in turn, those fish are going to be a little more lethargic. So that means you got to slow things down a little bit. Second thing you want to do is you want to create something that is going to trigger them into biting. You know, using a walleye pop, for instance, with all the between the surgical tubing and the pill float and everything in it, it has a tremendous amount of buoyancy. And then with the smile blade on top where it's moving it back and forth, it moves almost like a crankbait in the water. So it works tremendously well for triggering those fish. But you want to make sure and slow down your troll a little bit. Slow down your speed.
Well, and that brings up a really good point here. A lot of your traditional walleye lures that you've got either a minnow on or a nightcrawler or whatever other type of bait, maybe it's a leech that you're using, they've got a metal blade. And if you're going slow, like you suggest, that metal blade may not spin. The smile blade you have is a mylar blade, and this spins at super slow speeds, I know from experience. So getting back to that question, How slow do you go this time of year?
This time of year, I've fished as slow as 0.2, 0.3 miles an hour. I'm talking barely moving. Really, really slow.
Wow.
Up to one. It just depends on the body of water and what's going to trigger them to bite. And that's the whole thing, is figuring out how fast do I need to go? How short do I make my leader with a more buoyant lure versus with a metal blade, it's very difficult to fish down that slow. But with the Smile Blade, you can get away with it very easily, create the attraction, create the movement, and trigger them into biting.
One last question. When it comes to big walleye, are you giving them big offerings in terms of the flash from a bigger Smile Blade or maybe a larger size blade bait or the Maxonic bait fish that you have, or do you still go small?
This time of the year, I like going to a larger profile. Even though the bait hasn't hatched again, you're not getting into the early spring hatches where you've got small bait. You know, the one thing that I will always say, and you've heard me say it numerous times, is match the hatch. Match what they're feeding on as far as length, size, everything else, in order to get them to want to bite.
Well, there you go. Some great advice on catching the walleye of a lifetime this winter. Bigger presentations, slow things down. Consider this patented Max Smile Blade to help you do that. And don't be afraid to be doing some jigging. It's been around a long time, but it still works. You can find the Max lineup of lures at maxlure.com and at quality sporting goods stores all over the nation, especially where there's sporting goods stores around walleye waters. Bob, thanks for sharing this with us today on America Outdoors Radio.
You bet.
Now, if you're going to be catching walleye and cleaning them, you're going to need a sharp fillet knife. And here's why. If you've never handled a walleye before, the skin on those fish, it's tough. It's coarse. You need a sharp knife to get through it. You need a sharp knife to get those fillets, which are absolutely delicious. And that's where our friends from WorkSharp get involved. Maybe you're cleaning that fish in the kitchen. Maybe you're cleaning it in the shop. In that case, you can use an electric knife sharpener to give that fillet knife a good edge before you cut into that skin and flesh. Or if you are out on the water or at the shoreline and maybe you're getting ready to fillet up some fish and cook them for a shore lunch, well, that's when a pocket knife sharpener comes in handy. Either way, make sure you sharpen that fillet knife before you get to work and make sure the sharpener you use is from WorkSharp. Find out more at WorkSharpTools.com and look for WorkSharp products to sharpen your knives and tools at hardware and sporting goods stores all over the country.
It's time for the Trail of Shame.
Shame, shame on you. Shame, shame on you.
Stories of poachers, scoundrels, and other ne'er-do-wells. So if you see someone committing a criminal act on the water or in the field, turn them in. It's the right thing to do.
We've got an update from our interview with outdoors writer Brandon Butler last week about the torching of his cabin on Driftwood Acres in Missouri's Ozarks after Butler turned in a suspect for poaching. The poacher in question and the suspect who burned his cabin down is Corey Landrigan, 32 years old from Bunker, Missouri. He's got a long, long rap sheet, and he was picked up by the Shannon County Sheriff's Office on January 15th. He's been charged with arson in the second degree for burning down Butler's cabin and with unlawful possession of a firearm. Landrigan, you see, was on Brandon's trail camera at his cabin when it burnt down, and he had a firearm with him while he did it. As a convicted felon, he's not supposed to have that, and you've got to wonder, what was he going to do with that firearm if Brandon was around? As for you, Corey Landrigan, if you are guilty of this crime, I hope they throw the book at you. I hope you spend some significant time in prison. And welcome to the trail of shame. You richly deserve to be walking it this weekend.
Shame, shame on you.
We've got another update from a previous interview as well. As you may recall, the Drift Net Modernization Act, which was going to remove these large drift nets off the coast of California where they were killing not only swordfish, but all sorts of other things like sea turtles, that bill, even though it was passed by the House and the Senate, President Trump did not sign it. So they're going to try to pass it again with President Biden. Hopefully that'll get passed, and hopefully those halibut quotas that will be useful for sport fishermen fishing on charter boats in Alaska, hopefully that part will pass as well. As we wrap up this edition of America Outdoors Radio, I want to thank our great guests today, Bob Loomis, Charles Cotton, Ron Spomer, and David Van Wee, whose book, Storied Waters, has me more than a little inspired to fish not only some of the waters he's covered in his book, but also some western rivers made famous by writers like the Big Blackfoot River in Montana and the Rogue River in Oregon, places very special to authors Norman McLean and Zane Grey. We've got to go, and I hope you are blessed. Hope you stay healthy, too. It's been a crazy 2021, so do yourself a favor. Get out to a river or lake near you in the days ahead with a fishing rod or maybe a paddle and spend a little bit of time on the water in a canoe or a kayak, or maybe get out one last time for ducks before that season ends for most of us at the end of this month. After all, it is your country and your outdoors, so get out there and enjoy it.